Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. I guess this hour has a remarkable story to tell. It's the story of her life, really. She's a Kenyan-born teenager. She's now 18 years old, a senior at Rufus King High School here in Milwaukee. And it's a self-published story. The title of the book is Cataclysm, Secrets of the Horn of Africa. Her parents are from Somalia and had to flee the country because of the horrific civil war that was taking place in that country. So she was born in this refugee camp and lived there for quite some time. She came to Milwaukee with her family, her brothers, and she had aunts and cousins who were already living here. That was 8 years ago, and she's now 18 years old, so still is a very young person. Moving to Milwaukee, she says, was absolutely bewildering, but my, oh my, did she find her way through this community, and she's doing remarkable work. She says that as a child, she was never targeted for her identity, whether it was because she was a Muslim or she looked differently. Inequality and unjust treatment women and girls do face around the world, and she has taken that up as a cause that is important to her. She's received many, many awards. She's been working on eradicating human trafficking. She has been working with Serve to Unite, Pardeep and Arno, who have been on our show before, who are doing remarkable work, trying to get communities, disparate communities, to speak to each other and also focusing on gun violence. She received the Youth Leader Award from Safe and Sound, a crime prevention group here in Milwaukee, and the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee awarded her Young Adult Leadership. She used to be on the Milwaukee Youth Council and was also a part of the steering committee in the mayor's office on violence prevention. And we're delighted to have Zainab Ali with us in our studio. Zainab, hello, and thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You've lived so many years and thought so deeply about so many topics, and you're just 18 years old. Do you feel like you're 50?
I just went through a lot, and I had to kind of think about it and I guess jot it down.
Right.
I don't feel old, but it's just there's a lot of memories that I have, and I kind of want to share in order to, like, have people understand where I'm coming from, not just, like, my identity, but more of, like, who I really am in terms of personality related, because I know sometimes there are people who have trouble understanding me because of the way I act in a way, and part of the reason why I wrote the book was for people to get to know me better.
Yeah. It's a wonderful thing to have done, and to get to know Somalia better, and to get to know the refugee experience better as well, because this hasn't been an easy time for refugees, to say the least, in this country and around the world, right?
Definitely, especially with the Syrian refugee crisis right now. I mean, you see a lot of children who are dying in the midst of the conflicts, and they have no idea what's going on. I mean, we had two different symbolic images of what was occurring with a three-year-old who was found laying, like, I think near the ocean, I believe.
Yes.
And then the other child a few months ago, I believe back in November, who was covered in dust and
yes,
literally had no clue what was going on. And I think that's just a symbolism of what's occurring in Syria. But there are other refugee crises going on in some parts of Africa, especially the Horn of Africa. The Horn of Africa is pretty much known for cataclysm, as I wrote, which basically means a huge amount of violence. It's usually relating to political or economic crisis.
You write about, and you had to learn about, your parents' experiences in Somalia to the point where your father and mother would tell you things of what they had seen that were absolutely horrific, that would make them cry and make you cry as well.
Yes. My mother especially, she's very open-minded and pretty much shares about all the things that she faced in Somalia to kind of, usually is to explain to us that she went through a lot to get us here in America, and it is very emotional. She actually, when I was younger, she had to wait a couple of years to tell me certain things. Like, she didn't tell me about her ever being, like, raped or anything. Because I guess, it was very gruesome and emotional for her, so I had to wait until I was about 15, and kind of wanted to add that in the book to show people what life was in America, especially or in Somalia, especially for women. It was actually worse in the refugee camp because that's where most of the rape was happening, as bandits, Somali bandits, came into the refugee camp to target women, mm-hmm. and oftentimes kill men as well.
Mm. How many years were you at the camp?
Well, I was pretty much born in the camp in 1998. I was born in Dagahle camp, which is one of the three largest camps in the world. I believe it's 21 years old right now. I pretty much did grew up part of my life in Kenya. I left Africa as a whole when I was 6 years old, so I've only lived in the camps for 6 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Only 6 years. Six years is a long time.
Whereas my parents lived for like 10 years.
Did they really?
Yes. It's probably more than 10 years, but around that time. So my mom, I know she left Somalia in like 1995 because that's when her father was killed. And ever since, she was living in the refugee camp in Kenya until it was time for us to leave for America in 2004.
Mm-hmm. And you came to Kentucky first, is that right?
Yes. We initially lived in Louisville, Kentucky, which for the first 2 years is kind of strange because I'm right here in a new society and I don't really know how things work and how people
act. Can't imagine. Right.
Yes. As you probably read, a lot of things didn't make sense to me, especially when I was in K-5. So I kind of had to learn to adapt to this new culture and place.
Mm-hmm. And how did you make the journey then to Milwaukee?
So we found out that my father's family lived here. So his uncles and his aunt live here, as well as his cousins. And my grandpa was telling my father, because they're best friends and they communicate a lot. They're about the same age. It's kind of confusing. But he would tell my father about all these opportunities in Milwaukee. They have this Islamic school, Claire Muhammad. I attended there. And he was telling him how they can learn more about the religion and, you know, learn Arabic. And there's a great community here in Milwaukee and all those things and jobs, because in Louisville, at that time, in 2008, one of the things that they were facing in Louisville was unemployment, and that was actually the reason why my father had to leave Louisville in order to settle in Milwaukee. It's because they had more jobs, and so he wanted to find a better job to, you know, help with the family, because my mother wasn't working at the time either.
Mm-hmm. And you moved in with your uncle and all of you. You have quite a few siblings, so it was a lot of people in a very small space, wasn't it?
Yes. My uncle, he was a young adult at the time, so he was living by himself. And the thing is, his apartment only had one bedroom. And we were a family of six, I believe, at the time, and we kind of had to just cram ourselves in. So my parents would sleep in the living room with my baby sister at the time, and the rest of us had to share this one big bed in the bedroom, which was the only bedroom he had.
That had bed bugs.
Yes, and he didn't even know he had bed bugs. we didn't, like, if you look at his skin, he didn't have any spots that you normally see when someone has bed bug marks. So we had to tell him that this was happening in his house, and that's when it became urgent that we really desperately needed to find another home, because it was pretty much eating us up. Because I remember scratching so much that I would bleed.
Oh.
It was just really bad.
Oh. What's remarkable, and we'll talk about your service work in Milwaukee, but you are 18 years old, and you're extremely brilliant, and you're an author, and you've done so much service work, I would imagine. You'll be off to college next year, and we'll talk about your future plans. But isn't it remarkable? Don't you think, and everybody in your family, aren't you astounded by the fact that you will be the journey that you've made, and that you will be the first person in your family to go off to college?
I'm definitely proud that I will be the first person in my family to attend college. But as far as being an author, I don't know. I don't feel as if it's a big deal, but everyone else, my friends, colleagues, say that it is.
You're only 18 years old, after all.
I feel like people, I mean, if you're really good at writing, you can write a book, and it doesn't really, I mean, you just apply all the things you learn in school, especially the grammar and stuff. That's all it is. But for me, I think it's astounding when I see young people who are writing, like, fiction stories, because that's something I kind of struggle with. Because I don't really read fiction. I'm more of a nonfiction person.
I am too. But,
yeah. But for my book, it's more of my experiences. And I'm just researching the history of my country because the book was like basically a way for me to kind of get to know who I was, my identity. Because I left this country a few years ago, and I just remember all these flashbacks, but it never occurred to me how the conditions of the country, of what was taking place at the time, and that's what I got from researching. So when people say, "Wow, you're a published author," it's not really a big deal, because I was just having an identity crisis, and I needed a way to kind of make myself understand more who I was, mm-hmm. and just find a place or an identity.
You're going to have many in your life, don't you? You're going to have more than one. That's for sure, and that's good. Was it hard for your parents to, obviously it was, because they were there for 10 years, to leave the camp? Tell me about the process of being able to leave a refugee camp. 10 years in a camp is a long time.
It really
How
is.
Were they able to leave?
So initially the government of Kenya didn't actually want it to have Somali refugees in the camp. Because of their economic situation, they couldn't afford to have or provide needs for a bunch of people. Because at the time it was thousands of Somalis coming in, and it eventually became like a million. But, there are other countries such as Malawi, Tanzania, Mozambique, the government of Kenya was asking to settle these refugees. But those three countries refused. And the reason why they chose those countries was because they were considered our ancestral home. I'm considered a Somali Bantu, which is different from the majority Somali community there, because we're described as two different groups of people,
yes.
because of our features. So since they refused, the United States decided that it was going to take in the refugees, and the U.S. decided to work with the government of Kenya to provide needs. So they had humanitarian organizations such as the United Nations and Medecins Frontieres, mm-hmm. which now it's called Doctors Without Borders.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the government of Kenya ended up allowing these refugees to stay in the country. And we were actually nowhere near the city, so we weren't getting needs from the government of Kenya directly, but we were settled in Dadaab, which was a region of Kenya that is very dry, and there's no inhabitants because it's not really a region where you could do agriculture or actually be able to live. It's such a dry land. So they just decided to make a tent there and settle these people and have all these organizations come in and help whenever they could.
Have you found that people have been welcoming to you here? We've lived through times when I'm wondering if you've faced any kind of backlash, or your family has, because you are Muslims, if you feel as though people have been welcoming to you in this city, if you or family members have faced backlash.
When we lived in Louisville, Kentucky, as I mentioned, like in this first part of the second chapter of when I was in K-5, where there was a student who used to always, it seems like he didn't like me at all. But He looked like a mixed kid, but he was black to me. But I guess it was because of what I was wearing. I was wearing a hijab, and I don't know if that's what he didn't like about me. But he knew I was different, and he didn't like that about me. So he always tried to get me in trouble, and I think that was my first experience of, I guess, being bullied or being kind of harassed in a way, because at the time I didn't understand English at all. So I couldn't really pick up what he was saying. I just know he was very rude. And I did, I had a hard time making friends in school in elementary. There were a few kids, the Caucasian kids I got along with well, but I know I had problems making friends with African Americans at the time. And the thing about Louisville is it's a southern state, and the people really don't know much about their history, the African American community there. So I remember being called names, not me directly, but when I'm with a group of friends who are also African, excuse my language, but they used to call us like African booty scratchers, and I didn't really know what that meant at the time. I just knew it was bad. That was some of the things that I faced. It didn't make sense to me at the time because they were black too. So, and I didn't really know anything about slavery, the history of slavery, because in schools there we weren't taught those things. And I don't know if it had something to do with it being a southern state but I did have a pretty rough time growing up in Louisville, whereas in Milwaukee it's very different. People are very accepting. The city is more, yeah, it's more diverse than Louisville, although Louisville is a big city.
Mm-hmm.
That's the strange thing about it.
If we only knew more about our own history, and
yeah.
Good for you for investigating yours. I'm sure it wasn't easy to do. You didn't want to hear a lot of, because it isn't very pleasant, some of it, but a lot of problems we wouldn't have as many if we knew more about where we came from and who we are all together. We're going to welcome phone calls for you, and we have a lot to talk about. We have to get her in Milwaukee and all the work that she's done with Serve to Unite and lessening gun violence and human trafficking, etc. Our guest is the author. She's only 18 years old, and she's author of Cataclysm, Secrets of the Horn of Africa. Zainab Ali is with us. She is a senior at Rufus King High School here in Milwaukee. Here's our phone number if you'd like to join the conversation about the refugee experience, about backlash against Muslims, against Syrians, about how welcoming Milwaukee is, and about now her decision to really become heavily involved in making the world a better place while she's a very young person living here. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. I'm sure that she and I would love to hear from you. This is the Ideas Network. Let's welcome phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. Zainab Ali is our guest, and we go to James in La Crosse for our first caller. Hi, James.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. How are you, James?
Doing pretty good. What was the young lady's name?
Zainab Ali.
Okay, I can't pronounce it, but like I was telling your producer, I'm live in Louisville, but I'm up here in La Crosse.
Mm-hmm.
Our business trip, and just wanted to apologize for the experience you had in Louisville. I'm African American too, and I hate that you got treated like that.
It's okay. Wanted to
just wanted to apologize for that, and I really look forward to reading your book.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks,
James, very much. Well, that was unexpected, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Somebody from Louisville. Let's talk about some of the interests now and some of the awards and concerns that you have. I know you're concerned about trafficking, the plight of women all over the world, gun violence in this community. I know you work with the wonderful Pardeep and Arno, who are terrific human beings, on lessening gun violence and trying to get greater understanding among people here in Milwaukee. You've become a real activist, haven't you? How did that happen, and why did those causes become near and dear to you?
The story of my parents have always stuck to me. Just what's going on in parts of the world in terms of the conflicts and refugee crisis. But one of the biggest issues that I've always had concern of was poverty. And that's something you actually see everywhere. So not just in Africa, even in parts of the United States. And I just remember watching the news. I grew up watching national television such as CNN and MSNBC. And I just remember seeing all these UNICEF commercials about poverty. And I just knew at the time I was about seven that I should really do something. In Kentucky, I didn't really have the opportunity to do something like that. I wasn't familiar with any youth organizations or even organizations that worked in the cause of poverty. But when I moved to Milwaukee, I was connected to several people. I know we would have guests at my elementary school, Claire Muhammad, come in and talk to us about the environment, and or other guests who come in and talk about different issues, and I'll just try to form a connection there. And they would invite me to dialogue sessions and meetings, and that's pretty much where I started my activism. So when I was 12.
You were 12 years old. Oh, my gosh, you were so young.
Yes, so I would attend those sessions and try to meet all the people I can, and they would end up connecting me to other folks. And by the time I was in eighth grade, I ended up meeting Party Finarno, and I would attend their summits that they would have, or fundraisers, or even discussions that they had, because they were two very inspiring people.
Mm-hmm.
And when I attended their events, I would always end up meeting some other folks, and there was a point where I ended up meeting politicians and city officials, and that's when everything really got really active, I would say.
And the issues you've been working about on poverty, certainly lessening gun violence and other, and human trafficking. Tell me about that.
Human trafficking. It was in my junior year, so in last year, in my school, we were reading this book called Half the Sky by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudin, his wife.
Yes, I've read that.
And as of now, it's my favorite book of all time.
Is it?
It is.
Have you met him? You need to meet him. He'd like to meet you, I think.
I've never met him. I wish. I see him on Don Lemon, on CNN a lot, Don Lemon's show. And every time I just feel the need to take a picture. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe I'm looking at him. But what I learned so much about human trafficking on his book. If there's anything you're going to learn about in the book, there's a lot of stories of girls who went through prostitution and human trafficking. And we were able to watch, at least I checked out a CD from the library, which was also called Half the Sky. It basically was the visual version of the book. And I just felt compelled to do something about the issue of human trafficking. And I actually met Ms. Dana Wora Patterson at an event last February where the French Minister of Justice came into our city to speak to us about what was going on in France and her experience working as a politician in France as a woman of color. And we then, at the time, me and Ms. Dana, we talked about what we were doing in the city, and she mentioned that she worked for the Human Trafficking Task Force, and I always wanted to work with the issue of human trafficking, because I know our city is considered the hub of human trafficking, or they call it the pimp school, so it's where it all begins. And we decided there that we should form some sort of organization or a council, and we decided to form a youth council instead, and now we called it Inspirational Impact, which is a name I've been holding since I was 12 for any organization I ended up finding in the future.
Really?
Yeah,
that's amazing.
So it was kind of like an honor to my younger self. So the council was eventually launched in October 2016. And, yeah, it's called Inspirational Impact Youth Council. It's all youth-driven. What we hope to do is actually to eradicate human trafficking in our own city and eventually the world. And we are going to do that through doing workshops and talking to youth. And everything we do is all youth-driven. So we come up with the ideas. We are the ones who write up all the plans of discussions that we're going to have. And it's just to give awareness to youth about the issue, because we're trying to not have like more young people be trafficked in our city. So it's kind of like a precaution. The organization or council is like a precaution to young people so that they don't end up in that situation.
Mm. Zainab, can you give me an idea? I think people will be shocked when they hear that Milwaukee is the hub of human trafficking. Why is that happening so extensively in this city?
So a lot of times, especially in high school, us teens, we are trying to find our identity. And part of what happens is that we end up having low self-esteem. And there's this one person who sometimes, happens to be a male. And he sort of becomes like a father to us, provides us with needs that we probably will need. And like a brother or something, and that we end up being attached to that person and think that he's actually helping us to make our lives better. But then something happens, and the plan is eventually not what it essentially was before, and that's when young people end up being trafficked and taken away from their own their family. We had a survivor actually talk to us about her experience, and she told us that, there was a neighbor in her neighborhood who would come and give her all the things that she needed. She didn't understand at the time why he was doing that. But then one day he wanted, I guess, to give her a special treat and said that he was going to take her somewhere special, and it ended up being somewhere out of the state, like Chicago, and she ended up being in a hotel and was eventually trafficked.
Oh.
So little things like that, like having low self-esteem and thinking that this person can do better than what your family's already doing, ends up putting us in that situation.
Let's talk about change for a moment, because you've been through so many changes in your life. And I know that you were struck when you first heard, for those who don't know about Pardeep and Arno, please learn about them. We've had them on the show a couple times, but Pardeep's father was killed in the Sikh massacre that took place at the temple a few years ago here in Milwaukee. And Arno is a former white supremacist. Hard to believe the two of them have become fast friends and have formed this organization that's done work now internationally, Serve to Unite. I know you were struck by Arno and the ability of a white former supremacist to become a co-leader with Pardeep of Serve to Unite to change his beliefs. You've had to reinvent your life many times and change many times. Change is so hard. Young girls who've been involved in human trafficking, the low self-esteem, will have to change their lives to become stronger people. How do you get people to be able to change, do you think? What is that? How have you been able to change? Let's make it personal, so many times in your life.
For me, unfortunately, negative things that happened to me caused me to change. I grew up by family members telling me that I was never going to do this and that because I was weak and delicate.
Really?
I was a pretty shy person. And
you were?
Yeah.
That's hard to imagine now. Kinda, look at you.
I actually am at school.
Are you?
Yeah. I'm a totally different person outside of school. But yeah, things like that, I've always been like, people have been pulling me down, but there's always other groups of people who kept cheering me on and saying I was going to do great things. They could just see it in my eyes. And I always used to kind of like ignore all the negative feedback or negative comments that were always given to me, and followed what people who have been encouraging me and do what they asked of me, which was to succeed. And the thing is, I use negativity as a way of proving people wrong, and that's what compels me to do better or to do something that is beyond what others would probably do.
We're going to welcome more phone calls. Feel free to join the conversation. There are so many areas of discussion here, the work that Zainab is doing on human trafficking. Her life is a refugee, Somali refugee. She was born, well, she doesn't remember Somalia, but her parents do because they were refugees in a Kenyan refugee camp for 10 years, and she was born in that camp, came to Kentucky when she was a young girl, and then came to Milwaukee about 8 years ago. She is co-founder and chairwoman of the Inspirational Impact, which she came up with some years ago, a youth council that focuses on eradicating human trafficking. She's the author of Cataclysm, Secrets of the Horn of Africa. She's an activist. She's won awards for her work. She's only 18 years old, used to be on the Milwaukee Youth Council, part of the steering committee in the mayor's office on violence prevention. And our phone number for you to join the multi-layered conversation here is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page, where we'd like to read your messages as well, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. Let's go to Anne in Monona. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I just wanted to say I was trying to think of what distinguished you from the average 18-year-old, and I thought, all of a sudden, you're so mature, and your concerns encompass, it's not surprising considering what you've overcome, but you know, all the world's problems, you seem to have a grasp of what's going on, you know, which isn't, well, it is surprising, but I guess it isn't so surprising considering what you've been through. But I wanted to know whether you had an opinion of American teenage culture, you know, with all its emphasis on dating and, you know, oh, I'm so depressed and my parents are mean and you know, your actions, your attitude make me feel that all these people, all these Americans who are dragging themselves around with kind of minor problems, really, you know, should change their attitudes, because you know, there are some genuine problems in the world, and most of the things that depress people here are not genuine problems.
Thank you, Anne, for your question. I actually wish I had a normal American teenage life.
Oh, do you?
I really do. Because teens here don't have to think about the amount of money their parents are making and how they're going to pay their bills the next month. And I kind of have to deal with that issue all the time. And the thing is that my family, my parents don't make that much of a money in their employment life, we send money back to our family in Africa because they need it more than us. So it's pretty hard being a refugee growing up in America, because I know this is also an issue that other refugees face across the country. It's just, I've always wished I had a normal teenage life. I go through it all the time, even with having a lot of siblings. And being the oldest of eight kids, it's a big job as well. So it's pretty hard. But in terms of other teens, just being informed about the world, I think some teens, they are also change makers as well, staying on top of the things that are going on around the world. And that's actually what makes people stand out, just being informed in general. And that's actually the part of my life where I see it as a blessing. But it's still pretty hard considering I'm in high school as well, and there's a bunch of workload that goes into there on top of family life.
Thank you very much. What an interesting call from you, Anne. Our number is 800-486-8655. Do you find, Anne's talked about the triviality of some of the concerns of young people, and you, I don't know, it's striking to me that you're the kind of person that might not ever have a normal teenage life, even if you had grown up under entirely different circumstances, because you have a very deep life of the mind and a curiosity, and you're interested in history, and you're just a person who is ahead of herself in years in many ways, I think. And that's not bad. That's a good thing, don't you think, on some level?
In some level, or most level, it is. Just that all the responsibility that I have to carry in terms of my family life is what's kind of saddening. But otherwise, I have a pretty good life. I'm glad that I actually went through all the pain that I've been through or the experiences that my family had, because it led me to do great things in the community. It allowed me to understand what's going on around the world in terms of issues like poverty and other issues like gun violence. It kind of helped me kind of relate to people who are facing the same situation. So I'm
right.
In a way happy that, although it's saddening, I am happy that my family did experience all that, because it became like, towards the end, it came for the good. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have a lot of family responsibilities. You have many siblings. You care for many of them, I'm sure, as well.
I do. I'm kind of like a mother figure to them. And when I say that, I really mean it. Because things like field trips, they'll come up to me and ask me for money. They know very well that I don't work, and that's what my parents do. So I'm kind of like a mother to them. I'm practically raising them because they spend most of their time with me in terms of babysitting while parents are working, sometimes working evening shifts. And that says that I'm very close to them as well, and I try to be a good role model for them, although it doesn't really work out because some things I do seems pretty boring to them right now, so they'll probably appreciate it later in the future.
Absolutely. You have to have the long view in many ways. What are you doing next year?
I plan to study in college. As of now, my top two choices are Northwestern University and UW-Madison. I hope to get into one of those schools, although... And I plan on studying computer science.
You do?
Yes. I'm fascinated in the engineering industry because when I was in Madison back in June for a week,
you went to a conference, didn't you? Was that?
It was a girls' engineering camp.
Oh.
So it was a week long of just studying different engineering fields. I guess it was a way to kind of show us all the paths that we can take in the fields. And I remember learning that only 11% of the world of females are engineers. Only 11% of females are engineers in the world. And that, at the time, really hit me. I was like, okay, I really need to do well in school and become the engineering or software engineer that I want to be, because that is really sad. It's really sad that about like 70 or 80% of the world's engineers are men. It's a great field to go into because it also involves changing society and building onto infrastructure and things like that. And I know women are not weak, so I definitely had to find a way to hit that stereotype. Mm-hmm. And engineering seems to be the great field to do that. So that I say because a lot of kids think that to make a difference, you should be a politician. But really, you can go into any field and make a difference.
Yes, you can. Oh, we'll have to keep track of what you do. Somebody who looked at the Facebook Live, I think Scotty was doing that earlier, says, I knew I recognized that voice. Great to hear about your journey with the book. Hope you're doing well, Officer Ross. Do you know Officer Ross?
Yes, I know Officer Ross. Last year, I was trying to get a grant with Lead to Change to actually create inspirational impact. At the time, I wasn't looking at it as a human trafficking program or organization, but more of just having a youth organization where we could just talk about any issue. And he was a representative of MPD, the Milwaukee Police Department, because I went to the police department first in order to create a program there where we could help the homeless, because they have a homeless outreach program in the department. So they wanted to send, because I have to have an adult representative there, and Lieutenant Looney, he had me, I guess, partner up with Officer Ross, and he's a pretty cool officer, and I'm glad I met him. We had fun. We didn't win the grant, but I guess God had other things in mind for us. We ended up, I at least ended up creating a council with that name, even though our first mission didn't work out well. Yeah, so it's great to hear from you, Officer Ross.
Very nice. Justin asks you this question in an email. If there was one thing you could tell the youth of Milwaukee, what would it be?
Obviously, there's a lot of things I would say.
You can say more than one thing.
Yes. But part of, after writing this book, I've noticed that a lot of youth have been saying, well, I was thinking about writing a book, but I didn't really know, like, where to go from or how to do it. And some of them were because they just, I guess, just couldn't do it because they didn't feel like they were knowledgeable enough to do something like that. And what I would say is that if you are really passionate about something, it can be an issue that's being talked about right now, that if you're really passionate enough, you should just do it. Don't let people pull you down, because I've experienced so many of that, and I just took that as a way to, like, conquer them, or just in a way of kind of saying that, well, your words aren't going to pull me down, just to, like, prove them wrong. The thing is, if you believe that you're never going to do certain things, you're kind of proving your critics right. So what I would say is, if you have something in mind, then just go do it, because at the end of the day, it'll probably be the better for the city too. Your idea could be a life-changing idea, so definitely go for your passion.
Absolutely. Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, our guest is Zainab Ali. She's co-founder and chair of Inspirational Impact, a youth counselor. She's done all kinds of other work as well. She tells the story of the place where her parents are from, which is Somalia, and they had to leave because of the horrendous civil war in that country. So they spent 10 years in a refugee camp in Kenya, where our guest was born, and eventually they came to the United States as refugees, first in Kentucky and now in Milwaukee. And she writes about her life and the history of Somalia and the work that she's been doing and what inspired her to do all the work she's done in human trafficking and lessening gun violence, etc. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. You also went, and you write about this in the book, it was a conference of young people, youth leaders from all over the world that took place at Carroll University.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that? That sounded fascinating to me. And I'm wondering if you made international connections there that have served you well.
It's called the World Affairs Seminar, and it's hosted every summer in Carroll University. So it consists of a lot of students coming from around the world and even around the country, coming together and talking about issues that matter. And every year our topic changes. So the last time I was there, I believe it was, I know the following year, the topic that they were discussing was water. I'm trying to remember what it was the year I was there, but it was just great to see all these people from different nations representing every background coming together Yes, to talk about this issue that affects all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a lot of friends from California to Colorado to Germany to Burundi. And it was just amazing to see that. And we were all like one big family. I remember I just never seen so many youth who just respected each other like that. We were all like family. There was this thing we did where when we were sitting out to eat lunch or dinner, you could literally sit in anyone's table and automatically start a discussion. And it just felt like one big niche, like a family thing. And obviously, we were pretty sad when we left each other. I'm actually still connected to pretty much all of my group members.
May you always be so.
Yes.
Jake in Oshkosh. Hi, Jake. Jake, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead, Jake.
I've been listening to the program. I wanted to ask the guest this question. That when she's finished with her education, does she have any intentions of ever going back to Somalia in particular and the continent of Africa in general and attempting to resolve many of the problems that they both have?
Definitely. Thank you for your question. When I was growing up in America, one of the things that I've always thought of doing was actually returning to my country. That's actually why I never really knew what career to go into when I was younger, because there were some points where I thought, well, if I go into politics, I could probably end up like working for the UN or something, because at the time I thought you had to be a politician to do that. And then I've always wanted to be a doctor at some point in my life. I don't remember what grade I was, to work with Doctors Without Borders and help them with the refugees in Kenya and some parts of East Africa. But I always did have that feeling of returning home, and I think that's why I get a lot of flashbacks, and actually they make it hard for me to stay here, because there's a lot of things that's going on over there, and I just don't want to hear about it most of the time, because I do have relatives there who are facing things like that. And I plan on going to Kenya soon, actually. I hope to get my citizenship by this year, and hopefully this summer I can return and just see my childhood home again. And I do want to help refugees there, but I think there are certain things that I would have to do in order to help the people there. I just know I'm not able to go to Somalia because of travel warnings that we're actually not supposed to.
But they say
it's kind of too risky go to Somalia.
Yeah. Thank you, Jake. Allison in Milwaukee, about a minute left. Hi, Allison.
Hi there. How are you, ladies?
Good. How are you?
Thank you.
Good, good. So listen, I'm just hearing you talk about everything you're going to do in your future, and you have made the world a better place already, young lady. So congratulations to you. I live in Milwaukee, and I was so surprised to hear you say that Milwaukee is a hub for human trafficking. And I'm sure there's many women and people out there who are surprised, as I was. So my question to you is, how can I help? What can I do?
That's part of what our council is about, to kind of inform people about the things that's going on in our city. And one of the biggest problem we have is human trafficking. And I don't feel like we talk about it enough.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we have all these organizations for everything, but human trafficking is something we don't really discuss. And one way that I feel like we could help young people to not take that path is just to encourage them that they are beautiful just the way they are, because they shouldn't feel insecure about who they are or how they look. The part of the prevention process is just feeling that you are great just the way you are, and kind of help kids feel positive about how they are in general, so that they don't take paths.
And we'll get information to you on her organization and others, and you've inspired us to do another show on that topic. It's been some time. Thank you so much. All the best to you. What an inspiration you are. Don't be shy.
Thank you.
Don't be shy anywhere. Thank you for being with us. The book is Cataclysm, Secrets of the Horn of Africa. Zainab Ali, our guest, and we thank Marika Suval for producing this wonderful show and to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee.